Welcome to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan. Joining me as always is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.
You forgot the intro.
I was eyeballing it, or no. Freeballing it? No.
Freeballing?
What is it? Spitballing? Spitballing, or yes, I was going off cuff. Anyways, I wanted to let you know that since the last 3 weeks we're playing jazz or ragtime, and you kind of dinged me because I said, well, you said that that was the only type of music there was. We now have a whole different type of music for this week. This is Claude Debussy's last major composition, the Violin Sonata in G minor.
Oh, wow. It's like I'm watching Fantasia. That's how I feel right now.
Now, this is 13 minutes long, so we're going to fade out at a little bit because this is a lot of music to listen to.
Yeah?
Yeah, and it's getting really bad. I'll pop that down a little bit. Wow, I didn't mean to say pot, but I did. Pot, yeah. As a verb.
The old radio thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Vinny and I, we met in college doing radio shows, so that's where our audio experience came from.
You may have been one of the worst radio producers I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wait, expand on that. Tell me what I was doing so badly, because I remember the Dennis Leary A-hole song. I remember... That, cutting that very well.
Yeah, you did. But the fact that you played the Dennis Leary A-hole song, maybe was one of the problems. No, you're a little spazzy on the controls.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no one told me.
No. You weren't good.
but I...
You were okay on air as an on-air personality, but... If somebody was just listening to the way you would engineer,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was unlistenable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wish someone had told me this for the entirety of the 4 years that I was on radio.
We did.
Oh.
I think you thought we were just breaking balls, but okay.
You were kidding on the square.
No, we were really just trying to break it to you, and okay. You just assumed...
You know, I heard these guys making great jokes last week about how I was a terrible Parker and how I was over the line and taking up three spaces. Really, really funny guys I've met at the Costco and at the movie theater.
And they had this great joke at the end of it. They slashed my tie. It was a retaliation. That was it.
Commitment to the joke.
Yeah, a little button on there.
So, we are listening to a song from 1917, and everything in this podcast will be about 1917. Specifically, will be about the fourth week of January, which is January 22nd through 28th. The calendar, that's this year's calendar. It's a little different 100 years ago, but I'm guessing you don't have a 1917 calendar lying around.
I think dates still weren't the same, though. Okay.
Yeah, but the...
Things were in numerical order at the time.
No, but Sunday is the 22nd in 2017.
You're making it sound like we're getting these on with any kind of regularity and consistency, so I don't think it...
I aspire to get them on with regularity and consistency. Okay, this is enough of Claude Debussy. So,
enough for you, pal.
So, as you may have noticed, we have a new president. There was an inauguration. And you may be wondering, well, 100 years ago today, there already was an election, because the election's every 4 years. So there was a 1912 election, a 1916 election, just as there's a 2016 election. Is the new president being sworn in?
I was going to show you, because I was worried that FDR would fuck that up in there somewhere, because... Like weird presidency, you know?
Yeah, but 100 years ago, the inauguration was in March. So Woodrow Wilson won re-election in November, but he won't be sworn in until March. So we are now still in the first term of the Wilson presidency, not the second term. But he is in the news this week because he declared, he had a speech where he talked about peace without victory. That was his plan to get everyone in World War I, which was not the U.S. yet, but everyone else in the world out of World War I, which is basically saying, okay, we did it, everyone. Good job. Let's all go home and stop killing each other.
I've actually thought that's really what we should do with most wars, to get out. Just pretend you won.
Right.
Have the parade, and that's the end of it. Like, it doesn't matter if you won or lost, actually. It's like yourself the winner.
A very large version of the party that you're at, where you're either bored, or you're uncomfortable, or people are being awful, or you just want to get up and say, okay, that's it, I'm done, I'm leaving, good night.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did, the evening would get so much better. You'd feel so happy on the ride home thinking, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
I wanted to leave and I left.
Yeah, just pretend that, you know, pretend it went well.
Yeah. Oh, I'm getting a phone call. I have to go.
Like, we should have ended the Iraq war with the actual mission accomplished sign.
Mission accomplished, and then, like, everyone just goes home.
Yeah, like Bush in his flight suit, mission accomplished, ticker tape parade.
Sir, it's news from Iraq. I don't want to read that.
Did we not see the sign?
I'm just going to pretend everything's fine.
Yeah.
So, Peace Without Victory did not go over that well, but people mulled it over this week 100 years ago today. Also,
they're mulling. That's what's in the news this week. People mulled.
There was some mulling. Mulled wine really does seem like something from 100 years ago.
Yeah, it's being sipped on by Martin Mull.
Yeah. You can't have a mulled wine nowadays without assuming that you're doing something very old-fashioned.
Like, yeah.
From a Currier and Ives book.
I make a good mulled wine.
You do?
Yeah.
That's right. We were...
You've had it.
Yes. I've had your mulled wine.
Yeah.
It was good. What did you put in the mulled wine?
My wife did it. I'm lying.
Because there is like a kit you can buy where you just, it's like spices in a bag and you just dump it in a pot.
I don't know. See, I would use a kit. My wife would be like more like authentic.
Okay.
Yeah, like she could be a pioneer woman. Like, she has like canning and like sewing. Like,
wow, she does canning?
Yeah, yeah. When we finally have nuclear Armageddon, which I don't know, probably will happen next year or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're pretty well prepared.
Okay. I've got a bunch of instant mashed potatoes in the basement, which my brother calls apocalypse mashed potatoes.
Did you buy these at like Costco?
I did. I bought them on Costco, and they come in sleeves, and each one has 8 servings, and I wish they didn't make that so prominent, because in my mind, this is one serving.
Yeah.
Because you're putting it in a bowl, you're adding butter and milk, you're mixing it up, microwave it, and then you eat it.
Yeah.
And then some jerk tells you ate 8 servings of mashed potatoes.
I find that in general, I'd rather not know what I'm eating. Like, I get upset when I go to a restaurant and they have the calories on the on the menu.
Yeah.
It's like, no, don't even tell me. Like I know I'm eating shit. I'm like, there wasn't like part of my mind that's like, oh boy, this Arby's roast beef sandwich is exactly what I need to live to be 80 here. You know?
Yeah.
You know, just 2 bites of this, goodbye diabetes. Like, I know that this isn't good.
Right.
Like, why do you have to really rub it in with the numbers?
Well, sometimes rubbing it in helps. Like, when you see that the giant coffee drink that you have that's more ice cream than coffee is like 640 calories.
Yeah.
That's a shock.
Yeah.
Because when you think coffee, you think, well, coffee is basically calorie free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but is there a guy who wanders into a fast food place thinking this is healthy eating? Like, I didn't have a burger, I had nuggets, so I'm a health nut.
Well, as the joke goes, you could order anything in the world so long as you then add a Diet Coke to it.
That's true, yeah. I think I heard that even at the Improv back in 1984, right.
Yeah. That was like 2 years before Diet Coke came out. Like, people are making all these Diet Coke jokes. I guess we better invent Diet Coke. It was like a science fiction technology.
That's one of those jokes that, like the unfunny person you know.
Yeah.
Has. Like, I feel like every unfunny person has, like, their joke.
Yeah.
That they have, and that one pops up pretty often.
I've been thinking about dad jokes and why they're considered dad jokes, and most of them are just puns. And I think it's because humor is not required. You just need to have this little algorithm in your head.
You remember stuff.
Yeah, you need to remember stuff, and you need to, like, scan every word for possible double meanings.
Well, remember, I'm a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And I get stopped often by people like, oh, here's a joke for you. Mm-hmm. And I can honestly say, it's not once has it ever been a good joke. Not once. Like, I fake laugh plenty.
Okay.
Just to get out of there.
Yeah.
But
now, well,
usually it's 50-50. Half the time, really unfunny. The other half the time, horribly, horribly racist. Like, not even really a racist joke as much as a racist statement.
Yeah.
That they believe is a joke.
If you say it with a wink and a smile, it doesn't sound so awful. But no, it does.
Like, the only, like, nice thing about it is it makes me remember my dead relatives. Like, oh, yeah, I sure miss Uncle Al. I remember him telling me that joke. You're right. That is what you call an Ethiopian with a yeast infection. No, you're right.
I don't even know if that was a real joke or if you just made up an example. Please don't tell me. I don't want to know.
It's easy to find. Google it.
Yeah. I don't think I will. But thank you for letting the rest of our readers, our listenership, Google it. Okay, we're cutting that out.
I don't think it's a good joke.
No,
I don't.
No, and that's that. I think one of the real problems with like racism and racist jokes is that you can make a funny racist joke.
Yeah.
You come up with a racist premise and you build the joke around the racist premise that you don't need to explain.
Yeah.
So then you say the joke and it bolsters the racist premise, and then and if you did a good enough job in construction, people will laugh despite themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Which is unfortunate, especially for people making new racist jokes.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to do new racist jokes because there aren't that many new stereotypes being created.
Yeah.
You know, like even Italian jokes. Like, people always, I get put on a lot of Italian comedy shows,
mm-hmm.
and I don't belong on Italian comedy shows. I don't do any Italian jokes, really.
Yeah.
But the other people are doing them.
Okay.
And people are still like, well, you know, my mom's got the plastic on the furniture. Nobody's had that since 1972. nobody has it. And also, you're 60, your mom's long dead.
You know, the house we're in right now, the previous owners did have plastic on the furniture.
Really?
Yes. They were not Italian.
Hmm. What were they?
Hmm?
I wonder, is this still applied to other people?
They were a Portuguese-American family.
Yeah, so it's a Portuguese thing. This time, us Italians have been maligned.
It just moves slightly down the Mediterranean.
When those damn Portuguese were the ones, they were the culprits.
Oh no, it's not even the Mediterranean, because Portugal's on the other side of the Iberian Peninsula.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little geography kicking in there. So this was the week of the 11 cities race. Have you heard of the 11 cities race?
No.
Do you want to guess any of the 11 cities?
Okay. New York.
No.
I'm out.
Well, I've never heard of any of the 11 cities either. The name in Dutch is the Elfstedentocht, and my pronunciation of that is probably terrible, but it is a speed skating race,
okay.
200 kilometers in length. And the cities are, okay, deep breath here, Leeuwarden, Sneek, Egist, Sloten, Slaverten, Hindeloopen, Werken, Bolstad, Harlinger, Franken, Dokkum, and Leeuwarden.
Wow. Very IKEA. I know it wasn't Swedish, but it sounded like IKEA.
Yeah, I may have put a Swedish accent on it.
Yeah, anyway, it's all you.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that's not actually the Swedish accent. If you do a Swedish chef impression to Swedes, it'll say, it's a funny thing, but it's not true. You're doing a Norwegian accent. You're not doing a Swedish accent. You're not making fun of the Swedes. If you want to make fun of the Swedes, make fun of the Swedes, but don't do it with a Norwegian accent.
Is that Swedish what you're doing?
I believe that was actually a Swedish accent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bork, bork, bork.
This week's podcast brought to you by the Edison Dictation Machine. It's easy to think a letter, but to get your thoughts onto that typewritten page, that's the rub. You start to dictate. Bookkeeper breaks in. Telephone rings. Mr. Binks must see you in just a minute. Ugh. Get an Edison Dictation Machine, made by Edison, installed by Barnes. You can dictate a reply to each letter as you read it. Avoid the annoying interruptions and dictate live, punchy replies. Besides, its use is an economy. Get started right away today. Phone Edison Dictating Machine, Randolph 6732. We'll have an Edison at your desk in an hour. No obligation to purchase.
In an hour?
In an hour.
Wow. It's like better than Amazon. I'm always, yeah. Like pretty impressed by them.
Yeah, like you can't get a pizza delivered in an hour nowadays.
Man, I wonder how they did that.
I don't know how a dictation machine works. I'm pretty sure it's just a tape recorder.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no one will be doing the typing up. You can just hear yourself talk afterwards. They could have called it an Edison podcasting machine.
Exactly. Yeah. No one be listening and just.
Here's episode 5 of my new podcast. Put it on your Otari reel-to-reel system.
Do people still do dick? I've never had an office job.
Okay.
I know that sounds like crazy that I've never worked in an office.
Mm-hmm.
But like, do people still take dictation?
No. No, dictation was from the era where like men couldn't type, so they decided instead of learning how to type, I'm going to waste a huge amount of resources and hire a whole human being just to sit outside my office and make me feel special and important and take down whatever I say.
Really?
So yeah.
Do you think it was just an excuse to like seduce your secretary, or have I watched too much Mad Men?
I don't think Mad Men is totally off the ball, because I think a lot of the secretary's jobs were make work, to look busy and to make the boss look good. And nowadays, there are people in those secretarial roles, but they're called administrative assistants, and they do a lot of scheduling stuff. And that's more of an assistant job than a secretary job.
Do you have a secretary at your job?
No. No.
Are you sort of a secretary yourself?
No, I actually do work. I'm an editor at an ad agency, but there's no need for me to have a secretary or an administrative assistant. I don't know what they would do if I was given one. If the whole department was given one, I don't even know what we would task a person with.
I don't know much about it. I imagine you chase her around the desk like a old Beetle Bailey cartoon.
I was going to say, I think most of what your knowledge of The Office is from Dabney Coleman in 9 to 5.
I don't know much. I'm sorry. My job's at either like a bar or a classroom. That's it.
Also going on this week, the Danish West Indies were up for sale. Do you know where the Danish West Indies are?
In the Caribbean, I'm guessing.
Good, good. The Danish West Indies are three different islands: St. Thomas, St. John, and St. Okay, it's
St. Jude Children's Hospital.
No, it's St. Croix, but it could be
Croix.
It could be Croix. It could be Qua. I purposely don't drink that flavored beverage. I don't know how to say it, and I don't want to ask the wrong way and then have people say,
write it down, because I don't know what you're saying.
Croix.
I think it's Croy.
Croy?
Yeah.
Well, Croy's easy to say. It's spelled Croix, so I feel like it should be qua, like croissant.
Maybe. I've always said Croy.
So, Denmark owned these islands, and this is like the tail end of colonialism, because you don't think of Denmark as being a big colony owner, even though they own Greenland, and Greenland is 52 times bigger than Denmark itself.
Well, especially you see it on like one of those old maps.
Oh, yeah.
A little flat map. Greenland would be like 3/4 of the Earth.
Yeah, Greenland is like photobombing every picture, because it's like, I'm just going to get in here real big. No matter what you do, I just look bigger and bigger. So Denmark decided to finally cut bait on some of its territories, and it sold them to the United States and the German Empire. And the German Empire is, of course, doing a lot of other stuff nowadays, but the U.S., I believe, is going to be buying the Danish West... No, wait, it's the Germans. The Germans bought it. No, wait. No, I don't know. No, okay, yes, I am. I was right the first time, wrong second time, right... The first / third time.
I have no idea where we are right now, actually.
Okay, the Danish West Indies are going to turn into the United States Virgin Islands.
Okay.
Okay, there we go.
I knew that when you said, St. Thomas.
St. Thomas.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm very confused by this whole German thing.
Now,
is there like a German Caribbean island?
I think there are. You don't know them because only Germans go there.
Really?
But if you look on the map, yeah, there'll be some where people speak French.
I can't picture tropical Germans.
I had a friend who was English, and he had all these English islands in the Caribbean that he went to because it felt like home. Even though it was a Caribbean island, it was staffed entirely by Brits, and all the food there was imported from Britain, so they were British brands.
So you have this beautiful island filled with like fresh seafood. All over the place. Throw a line in, pull a crab out, delicious lobster the size of your head.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we're going to import
steak and kidney pies.
Yes.
Yeah. And Yorkie bars. The big story this week is the Silent Sentinels. The Silent Sentinels were the beginning of the end of the suffrage movement. And when I say the end, it makes it sound like something terrible happened to the suffragists. But mm-hmm. it's that they were fighting to give women the right to vote, and it ended up succeeding. But they tried for decades and decades, and there was a schism the year before this, in 1916, in the movement. It was like a Martin Luther King, Malcolm X thing, where there's one group who just wanted to do the right thing and slowly but surely, over the course mm-hmm. of 30 or 40 years, get the right to vote. And one group is like, no, we're going to actually make big changes and get people to pay attention to us. And the Silent Sentinels were how they got people to pay attention to them. And it's not the way you think. There was a protest involved, which is what you think.
Mm-hmm.
But all they did was stand in front of the White House, stand in front of the wrought iron gates, and hold up signs.
And they didn't chant, they didn't...
Nope, they purposely didn't say anything. They just stood there, stock still, silent.
Well, who the hell was that going to bother?
Well, maybe... This is back 100 years ago, and people's ideas about, like, women's places were totally backwards. And all of the...
At least now we have the pussy hat. So, like, I do think it's nice that they've come, like, oh, I couldn't possibly raise my voice to a man to dressing like a vagina. I like that. I like that that's where 100 years ago. It's good. Yeah. It's a good thing.
Yeah, we just had the Women's March on Washington. So, this was the idea of the National Women's Party from their weekly newsletter. They said to stand in front of the White House, but not to say anything. And silence was going to end up speaking louder than if you scream. Because if you scream, it makes people think, oh, those terrible, annoying women with their bothersome yap, and all they do is talk all day long.
And so they went the opposite way.
Right. They went the opposite way. Some of the signs say, Mr. President, how long must women wait for liberty? And Mr. President, what will you do for women's suffrage?
You know, you're never going to get any retweets with signs like that.
No, and it's not even in a good font. It's the most boring font you can imagine. It's like the font an accountant would use on a joke banner where it says, today's your birthday.
It's like a very dull protest of a very dull president. It's like...
Well, Wilson was kind of a dull president.
Not much happens here in Sleepy Town.
Compared to other presidents I can think of, he was a very dull person. I'm reading a book in prep for this podcast, and it's about Theodore Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping there's good Theodore Roosevelt stuff in 1917, but I read about his election against Woodrow Wilson and Taft, because they all ran against each other in 1912. Mm-hmm. And Wilson was the sort of guy who was very quiet in public, but could make a lot of good jokes on the stump. And Teddy Roosevelt was the exact opposite. When you think of Teddy Roosevelt, he's like, he's shooting a boar. He's arm wrestling a bear.
Loud yelling. Yeah.
Right. But that all stopped when he got up on stage. Mm-hmm. When he started to talk, every sentence was 200 words long, and he could never say one thing without then qualifying it with another and then qualifying the qualifier. And it took a long time to listen to a TR speech.
Mm-hmm.
But Wilson was more of a modern politician, where he was not a nice guy in person, but on the stump he could pretend he was. So this, I guess, was a protest designed for Wilson himself, because he respected the idea of someone standing still and just getting the job done. They don't need to yell because he's not listening.
Have you ever seen someone doing a silent protest before? Well,
yes. I went to D.C. a couple of years ago. I saw the people who are standing outside because there's still protests going on every day.
I've seen it too.
Yeah.
I actually, it's not really a protest, but this is from teaching.
Okay.
And so this was years ago. They, I guess they had the students, and I don't really know, I can't remember for like what they were protesting. I think it was either bullying or gays.
Okay.
Oh, not, they weren't against gays, for gay rights.
Right.
We're protesting gays by being quiet about this. No, and so they would come into, and you were told ahead of time, like, look, these kids are doing this, it's like a fundraiser, whatever kind of mm-hmm. thing, the key club is doing it or something, I don't know. Just, you know, they have to do their work, but respect that they'll be quiet.
Okay.
Now, you give a 15-year-old that ability, okay? Mm-hmm. They're not going to just come in and be quiet. No, instead they have to wildly gesture, like putting on a big mime act.
Like they're in the background of the Today Show.
Yeah, just saying, like, they couldn't just ask, like, there'd be no, like, quietly, like, can I go to the bathroom? No. Instead, it had to be like Chewbacca's family in the Star Wars Christmas special, wildly gesturing because they can't speak English.
That's a deep cut. If anyone has not seen the Star Wars Holiday Special,
yeah,
you're watching it, and Chewbacca's family shows up, and they start grunting,
itchy, Lumpy,
yes,
and
Mala,
okay.
His wife Mala, but she doesn't have a funny name the way Itchy and Lumpy and Chewie do.
Mm-hmm. And they don't speak English.
No,
so they just have to gesture and grunt and wave
this is
their
a
arms.
2-hour movie.
It's 2 hours of people doing this. And that's what it's like. You know, Victor's like, oh boy, I have a day where I can not talk, yet also get a lot of attention for not talking. And so you get angry at them. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like so you looked like you were anti-gays or bullies or whatever, or pro-bully, one or the other.
That's terrible.
Yeah, because you'd get frustrated by it. And by the end, like stop it. Stop your damn protest.
This sounds like a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. Because, like, you know, Larry will, at the first, do something that looks terrible, but you've been with him long enough to know he actually hasn't done anything wrong.
No.
But then he'll try to correct it and actually do something wrong.
Yeah, so you sit through, like, a couple hours of this, mm-hmm. and you just want to strangle this kid who's standing up to bullies.
Would it help if they started to play the sad clown of life music at the end?
That would have helped. You're right.
We move on to Nickelodeon. Every week we'll recommend a different movie, either from 1917 or set in 1917. This week it's the original Time Machine.
Ooh.
It's not spooky. You don't have to spooky it up.
No, I was going like, ooh, like I'm traveling through time.
Okay. Okay. I thought you were going with like the 1950s theremin music.
No. I'm traveling through time.
You don't actually need to do that because this was a fantastic movie. It's from 1960. It was directed by George Pal, who also would do The War of the Worlds, another H.G. Wells story.
Was this the first time he did the Time Machine?
I think it may have been.
I have to imagine there was an earlier one of that, right?
Like, this is considered the definitive one. There was one from like 2001 or 2002 that came out, but I mean it's an okay movie, and they have a lot more budget for the special effects. Mm-hmm. But this is the one that built the gigantic gold seat with a big gyroscope thing around it and the controls. Yeah, when you think of a time machine, you either think of that or you think of the DeLorean.
Right.
So this movie begins in 1900 with the time machine. The man who invented the time machine, I think his name was George, but in the book he's unnamed. But in the movie, we'll call him George. And he, in the year 1900, is telling his friends about his great invention, but he gets tired, and he wants to show off. So he jumps in and goes forward 17 years to find out what one of his friend's sons is like, because his friend just had a baby. Mm-hmm. And he jumps right in the middle of World War I and is told, sorry, your son just died. And from there, he feels terrible about war and decides, I'm just going to keep moving forward until I find a time where there is no more war. And he jumps forward something like 70 centuries. You've really never seen The Time Machine? This isn't familiar to you?
No, I've seen it.
Okay.
No, I've seen it, yeah.
Oh.
You're on a roll.
Oh, okay.
I thought you just like really wanted to tell the story of The Time Machine. Oh.
I realize I do, but I don't want to subtract too much because once he jumps into the future with the Amoy and the Morlocks.
It just seemed like you're reading the plot.
That was extemporaneous.
Oh.
But once he gets into the future with the Amoy and the Morlocks, we're well past 1917. So watch the movie. It's fantastic. And there's a little bit of 1917 for you, too, if you're doing your homework.
One thing always jumps out at me about the time machine was I was given a gift when I was like 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
And it was like these like abridged illustrated books, famous books. And one of them was The Time Machine. But I didn't know that these were abridged illustrated books. I thought these were the actual books.
I know that feeling.
I was very impressed with myself at like 9 years old that I'm like tearing through like Tale of Two Cities and the collected works of Shakespeare. I must be a genius. I'm reading this.
I did the exact same thing with a young adult copy of Tom Sawyer. It was maybe 70 pages long. There were lots of illustrations. There was one paragraph per page. And I read that thing in an afternoon. I felt so great about myself. And it wasn't until years later, like in high school, when we had to read Huck Finn, I was like, wait, this isn't what I... Look at... Why are all these words... What are all these N-words doing here?
There's no cartoon. There's no...
there's so much going on. There's words I don't understand.
Do they do that with modern books, you think? Is there like an abridged children's version of like the corrections or something?
Oh, they actually do. There was a book... called Manhunt, about the search for Lincoln's killers.
Yeah.
And the author then wrote a young adult version.
That wasn't by Bill O'Reilly?
No. No, I don't know who's writing those Bill O'Reilly books. I don't think he's even read them. I'm fairly certain that not only has Bill O'Reilly not read his own books, that no one has read the Rush Limbaugh books. Have you seen the Rush Limbaugh ones where he's back in the Revolutionary War? And the picture is like him photoshopped on a Revolutionary War soldier.
These are fiction?
I don't know. I can only assume the only people who are buying this are conservative grandparents who think, I got to get something for my 8-year-old. Oh, this looks great. Get him some Rush. Get him to be a Ditto head. And the 8-year-old sees him and goes, this is not a slam on Rush Limbaugh. It's just, why is this weird guy's giant head in the Revolutionary War? I'm not reading this
book. It just seems like the kind of books are really only sold in the Atlanta airport.
Yes.
Like it's the last location of a B. Dalton.
Or a Walden books.
Yeah, in the Atlanta airport. And that's where they all are. It's the only place you could buy those books there. Go back to what you were saying. I interrupted before about Manhunt.
Oh, so James Swanson wrote Manhunt, but then he wrote a junior version for kids. So instead of the 400-page book about Lincoln's... the hunt for Lincoln's killers, there was like a 150-page book. But the same guy wrote it with the same material. He just wrote it in a style that was more accessible for kids.
Okay.
And I think there's 3 or 4 others that have been like that. Like if you write a big nonfiction bestseller, someone's going to ask you to write a dumbed-down version. We are on to birthdays. And having a birthday 100 years ago this week is Louis Zamperini. Now, if you were around in the 1930s, you would know Louis Zamperini because he was a very popular track star. Mm-hmm. Back in the 1930s, there weren't national sports because there wasn't like a national press or a national radio. So there were local sports, and he was a local hero.
Well, the NFL was already around at that point.
Yeah, but they didn't go to like San Diego to play a game.
No.
Buffalo would go to like Scranton to play a game. Mm-hmm. And then you'd find out like half the teams were in cities that don't exist nowadays. So Louis Zamperini was Italian American. He was only 5'4" and he was like not even 100 pounds, I don't think. But he was built to run track because the lighter you are, the smaller you are, the less you need to carry.
Why wouldn't you just be a jockey? I don't get it. I whenever you see a little man, don't you just wonder why they're not a jockey?
Maybe he would have eventually been a jockey. Maybe jockeys is where track stars go.
Yeah, if I see a guy who's like, here's like, I'm short, I'm 5'7". Every once in a while I'll see a guy a couple inches shorter than me and small. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, I don't understand why he wouldn't just become a jockey.
But jockeys don't just need to be small. They need to be really physically fit.
I think that comes... Look, you can become fit. You can get fit.
Okay.
Like, you know, but I can't make myself 5'3", 105.
Yeah. The same way that if you turn out to be 6'7", maybe you should play basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, yeah, I think most 5'3", 105 guys could become jockeys.
Okay. Okay. Fair point. Louis Zamperini, instead of becoming a jockey, ran track. And then he went into the military. Then while he was in the flying a plane mission, he was fighting in the Pacific, and his plane crashed. He and 2 other guys survived. They went on the life raft for months and months. They were being shot by Japanese Zeros. They would jump out to cool down, and then sharks would try to get them. It was stuff like, if you made up, people would say, stop making stuff up. This doesn't actually happen. And then he got captured by the Japanese and put to a prison camp. And he said it was like was like worse than being in a lifeboat for 4 months with no food, the way that he was treated, until he finally not broke out of jail, but then the war was over and he was able to survive.
You hear stories of the Japanese army being particularly awful. Yeah. Like, whenever you hear like an awful like war crime kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
it seems like it's the Japanese army.
Part of that, I think, was indoctrination by the media, because the Japanese were told the whole time, we are winning the war and everyone else in the world is committing atrocities against us.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're told that, you want to fight back, and sometimes you want to fight dirty. And
which is when you see Japanese people now, you can't imagine this is the same people.
Well, if you see German people now, you don't think about World War II, or you probably shouldn't. But
I don't know, that accent, I don't know.
So, in honor of Louis Zamperini, I have a quiz for you called the Unquiz. Oh, I was going to call it a series of unfortunate quizzes, but there's only one quiz, so I'm going to call it the Unquiz. He was his story was told in the movie Unbroken, which was directed by Angelina Jolie. Here's a quiz for you about other Uns. So, Louis Zamperini undergoes hell is the movie Unbroken. What is the movie that reunites Pulp Fiction co-stars Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson?
Unbreakable.
Good. The movie where Diane Lane cheats on Richard Gere.
Unfaithful.
The movie where Diane Lane fights cyber terrorism.
Ooh. I don't know this one.
Untraceable.
Don't know that one.
Finishing out the Diane Lane trilogy, the movie where Diane Lane goes on vacation to Italy.
Oh, wait. I know this. Hold on. Under the Tuscan Sun.
Yes. Yes.
I like Diane Lane. I do.
Okay. Not enough to watch Untraceable.
No.
But no. Clint Eastwood Western.
Unforgiven.
Yes.
Nobody likes a cut-up whore. That was one of the lines in that movie that my friends and I would say to each other all the time when we were in high school. That was a line that, as 16-year-olds, we latched onto.
Something that my brothers and I latched onto was from the movie Scrooged, mm-hmm. where Bill Murray is deciding who's going to get what gifts for Christmas, and they're either going to get a VHS player or a towel.
Yeah.
And people, he's getting like ratings for different TV shows, and as he hears one, he goes, oh, towel, because he's just so offended by the low rating.
Yeah.
And whenever there's a bad song on the radio for the next 10 years, we go, oh, towel, which meant turn the radio off.
Yeah.
It was great. Back to the Unquiz. Name the Smucker's frozen peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
What? I actually don't understand that question.
It is the Uncrustable sandwich.
Oh, yeah, it's like a little disc.
Yes, the little disc. Right. Yes. Name the word used by Trinidadian actor Jeffrey Holder to sell 7-Up soda.
The Uncola.
Very good.
Do they still sell 7-Up?
Yes. Of course they still sell 7-Up.
I've not seen a commercial for 7-Up in years.
Well, they still sell it. They don't need to advertise it.
I see commercials for Coke, all the time.
Yeah, but 7-Up is grandfathered in.
I see commercials for every other soft drink. I see Dr. Pepper commercials. I don't see 7-Up commercials.
I think of 7-Up as an old man drink.
Yeah. It's really just meant to be like, mixed with a whiskey.
Yeah. Give me the movie where Jet Li gets treated like a dog kept in a cage. Morgan Freeman has to save him.
I don't know this one.
Unleashed. Okay, this is going to be tricky. This is the name of a Ray Liotta movie from the 1990s, a recent movie from Korea, an upcoming Katherine Heigl movie, and a TV show that recently starred Poppy Montgomery. Same name for all of them.
Onions.
Unforgettable. And every one of these was forgettable because you didn't even know.
No.
Not even the people who made them apparently realized that there were 5 other properties called Unforgettable. They were all forgettable. Yeah. Very ironic. Name the video game series starring adventurer Nathan Drake.
I don't know.
Uncharted.
I'm not a video game guy.
No. Okay.
And it's funny, you're not either, yet you wrote about video games.
I was. I was paid well for it.
Yeah, you have a whole nice book on video games, and I've never seen you actually play a video game.
We used to play when we were roommates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you used to get the free stuff.
Right.
And some of it was like really weird, like free games that like odd Japanese game. Like, remember the one about like you were a mosquito? You just have to go around biting a Japanese family and sucking their blood?
Yes, Mr. Mosquito. That's in the Weird Game Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That was great.
It was a fun game.
Yeah.
But it was odd that they put that much work into a game where you're a mosquito.
Okay, three more, then we're finished
three
with the
more, God,
quiz.
Please.
Name the fictional element that they were searching for in the movie Avatar.
Oh, I remember unobtainium.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. You got unobtainium.
I remember when watching the movie, they say unobtainium. I actually laughed out loud.
was it a genuine laugh or was it? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yes, that. Like, genuine. Like, how did. Because you got the feeling that he put that in the script with the idea that he would change it later.
Yeah.
And then never got around to it.
As I was writing this quiz, I was like, there's no way Vinny's going to remember this. And he's going to yell at me for asking.
I'm unobtainium.
The movie about Kathy Bates' character from Titanic.
The unsinkable Molly.
Close enough. Unsinkable Molly Brown.
That's it.
Okay.
And it wasn't Molly Dodd.
I was waiting for the Dodd.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's 50-50 between Brown and Dodd. Is he going to remember? Horse with a horn on its head. Final one. A little easy.
An unicorn.
Unicorn. That's it.
Yep.
Okay. And that concludes this week's episode of... What's the name of the podcast?
100 Years Ago This Week.
That concludes this week's edition of 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast.
This week. It's still this week.
I don't know the name of this show. We'll see you next week. If you have any comments, please write to us at 1917podcast.com. Until next week, ahoy, ahoy.